It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock from BEA, beautiful studios of Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's lovely, lovely, lovely. You know, one thing I wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of people understand is there is an effort on my part, a conscious effort for me to be a little radical, you know, to demonstrate, to kind of open up where the edges of the envelope are. You know, we're not afraid. And the only way that you can do that, be a little controversial, demonstrate no fear, go nose to nose with the man, you know. But, you know, you don't want to be perceived as being just crazy, because then you shut off the audience. But the thing is that what is subjective opinion of where crazy starts? You know, I got to ask Eric. Eric, where's crazy start? When does that happen?
Well, I hope this doesn't sound too fuzzy, but it's in the eye of the beholder. You know, it depends on who you're talking to. It depends. You know, one thing that is never crazy is when you talk about defending the rights of other people. You know, if I defend my own rights, then people might go, he just wants to smoke weed, or, you know, and you get dismissed pretty easily. But if I defend the rights of other people, and it's, again, a key tenet of both libertarianism and Christianity, people are being messed over by the government in particular, or just other people. People rally to that, and you're never considered crazy when you do that. They might ultimately disagree with you. They might think, well, you know, I think a government monopoly on education is fine, and, you know, I think Social Security and payroll taxes, it's the best we can do. But they're never going to dismiss you as a nut job, because they're always going to say, they're going to respect that. They're going to respect that it's not about you, that you're out there and that you want the best for other people. That always goes well.
That's a really good answer. That's always been my experience, you know, that we just look, hey, we know where this goes. Defense of the rights of the individual is always, yeah, but we need to have, you know, control of whatever, and they're going to do this with their freedom, and they might, and we're afraid of, and not, nah, I'm rights of the individual, and it always just seems to work out. And one of those things is, you know, just the right to complain. The right to speak, the right, and then we find ourselves in a free speech zone. You know, I remember, you know, people wearing the "What Would Jesus Do?" bracelets. You know, well, I don't know. What would Jesus do? You know, and hopefully we're representing what he would do is you just share the truth. And I keep coming back to that. You know, is truth a subjective thing, or is there, you know, they go, what is truth? I don't know, not lies? I mean, what is truth?
Yeah, I think if you look at Christianity, there's a very clear truth that we're all knuckleheads. We've all sinned and fallen short of the grace of God. And so God has made a way for us to accept for free gift, the blood of Christ to cover those sins. And so that's a basic, that's the fundamental truth of Christianity. And you can even see it in Judaism, in fact. But it's by the grace of God that we're saved. And if we've been saved by the grace of God, and if we're knuckleheads, then we should be gracious to other people. And so that's the starting of our conduct towards other people, and that, of course, relates to government policy as well. We're not going to use the force of government on other people. We're going to respect their free will, at least insofar as they don't harm other people, and we're going to be gracious towards them. And then, of course, that dovetails nicely with libertarianism, where people should be able to do what they want as long as they're not doing direct and significant harm to other people.
When we come back, you know, that's a very good place to pick up on. What makes you a good Christian? We'll be right back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and my very special guest, Eric Schonsberg. Now, I want to make sure that we'll get to your calls here in just a moment, Joe, you're next. But I wanted to, you know, make sure we get what we were talking about at the end of the last segment. You know, being a good Christian is, I give you some comments and some quotes that I'm sure a lot of you have heard. You know, you know people by their fruits. Well, you go, by grace of God, I accepted Christ. I got immersed and got all wet and everything and baptized and I'm good. Well, I question your faith because you didn't do whatever it is that they want you to do. You know, you never were really Christian because you did or didn't do or something. I mean, these are the kinds of comments that you get if you're not towing the party line, which often is a Republican Party line, by the way. And they go in and they say, well, if you were really Christian, you would fill in the blank. Have you heard any of these things before, Eric?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it comes from two different angles. One is people who are confused about basic Christian theology. They think they're saved by their works. Instead, Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 talks about we're not saved by our works. Ephesians 2, 10 says, though, we are saved to do good works. So people confuse correlation with causation. They think they're saved by their good works. And in fact, that's ridiculous and impossible. So, but the other angle on it is legitimate, but sometimes oversold, the idea of fruit, and that it is true. I mean, if I claim to be a Christian or claim to be a libertarian, for that matter, and I don't, you know, live up to being a libertarian intellectually, then people are right to question something I profess. So, if the fruit does not line up with the professed faith, then other people are going to question, and you should question whether, in fact, you are what you claim to be.
You know, the one thing I tell you when I've trained myself. To when asked controversial questions or controversial, you know, I have no problem giving a purist libertarian answer. I mean, you know, I don't know whose body is that. No, it's yours. Okay, as long as you're not bothering my body, you know, I don't care. Well, the thing is that it gets to the point on controversial issues that they'll go, oh, but you know, am I demonstrating my faith in truth by avoiding certain subjects? I don't think so. What do you think, Joe, in Pennsylvania? What do you think, Joe?
Hello, Ernie. If you worship some, in answer to your question, it's not what I called, but in answer to your question, if you say that you believe in the one who says he's the way, the truth, and the life, then obviously there should be no subject that you're afraid of.
And what did you call in on, Joe?
Well, I called in, you know, it amazes me that, you know, and I've heard this from different pulpits that, you know, that they act as if right is a dirty word sometimes. And yet, one of the people who, as a matter of fact, the only person in the Bible that God said he hated was Esau. And the reason why he hated him and called him a profane person was that Esau gave up his birthright for a mess of pottage. And, you know, I think that's so...
Well, define birthright, gave up his birthright. How's your definition of that?
Well, in his case, it was literally his birthright because he was the elder son. So he forfeited that right because he wanted something to eat. And, you know, when we forfeit our rights, you know, and basically what we do in this country and the thing that we're sold on is giving up our birthright as liberty, and we give it up for security. And we've done that in so many different ways. We've done that in... You know, well, 9/11 was part of that was the latest example of it. But, you know, during the Great Depression, you know, they sold people on the idea that, you know, you can't really be free if you're hungry. So they redefined freedom to mean, you know, free not to have to worry about hunger and not to worry about money. And they started all these government programs.
You know, it's a good – thanks for the call, Joe. It's a good way for us to kind of take off on that. Do we have to give up something to get something else? I mean, what does Christ, God, ask of us, Eric?
Well, there is a sense of counting the costs. I mean, there's a couple parables where the Christ talks about, you know, you're pretty silly if you go to do this and you don't count the cost and you have to stop halfway. So there's a famous book by Bonhoeffer called The Cost of Discipleship, but I really like what Dallas Willard says in response to that, where he talks about the cost of non-discipleship, you know, that you're making a choice at every moment if you're a Christian to follow God or not. And if you follow God, there's things you're giving up, but if you believe God wants the best for you, then you believe that the thing you're getting by doing God's will is in fact larger than what you're giving up. So, you know, as an economist, we're fond of talking about opportunity cost, but every choice you make, you're giving up something. But we believe in our choices that what we gain is greater than what we lose.
You know, one of the SIG lines, I have several I put on the bottom of my emails every now and then, something old come up, I put up there, you know, several, I don't know, it's like four or five quotes I have. One of them is, if we be ruined for bravely resisting tyranny, what then be our fate should we submit?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Francis Marion, 1781, colony of South Carolina. And, you know, from that, if we're so worried about what's going to happen to us by us standing up, throwing up our chest and, you know, resisting tyranny, you know, well, what the heck do you think is going to happen if you submit to it?
Right. That goes back to what Jesus was, when you were asking, you know, was he a rebel or a revolutionary? And he was. And I think one of the confusions for Christians and non-Christians is they think of Jesus as this kind of milquetoast, you know, really nice guy with long flowing hair. And he was kind to people and healed them. And he certainly did those things. But, you know, he was remarkably difficult on the Pharisees. He was tough on Herod. You know, you read Matthew 23, and you'll never again say Jesus was a nice guy. I mean, he was nice in part, but that's certainly not the sum total of his character. And so, yeah, there's a need for us to step up and defend the those who are vulnerable, and part of that can certainly be done in politics.
When we come back, we're getting up close to this break, and we can get into it a little bit, but there's a couple of things I wanted to go in and tell you with a story. Crown Ministries, I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, I'm sure they still have it around. For young marrieds, it is a program by which they help you get your finances in order to make sure that you can give your 10% to the church. That's what it really comes down to. But they go in and they'll say, they'll have a bar graph or kind of a United Way thermometer or something. And they'll say, well, this is how much that you make, and then this much goes to, you know, taxes and so on, and this much goes to whatever, and this much 10% to the church, and this one we're going to, you know, lessen all these others so we make sure we get this 10% to the church. Well, as you go through the Crown Ministry thing, they put it immediately, even a young person, I think even before it became libertarian, they had this, you know, the small sliver on this thermometer as taxes. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm going, oh, heck no. It's much bigger than that. So then they get into render unto Caesar, that argument. And then I wanted to make sure that we also talked about, you know, turn in your cloak for a sword. So when we come back here on Declare Your Independence, I want to make sure we focus on that. But I wanted to, you know, tell this story to you just a little bit so you understand. Crown Ministries, as you go in and they say, well, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. If you actually read it, what was going on is they were trying to trick Christ into saying that he was Lord over Caesar, or, you know, he's breaking some law somewhere. And he's like, you know, and pulls out a coin, you know, he says, okay, well, they go, it's about paying taxes. And he goes, well, let me see a coin. I don't know whose likeness is on there. Caesar's. He goes, I don't know. Looks like it's his then. You know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Well, I'm wondering what isn't Caesar's. The government will come up and say, oh, hey, man, you know, we just passed a law and this belongs to him, your property, your income, your labor, and I have to ask, you know, what would Christ say? Is there anything that's not Caesar's? Is there anything that's not Caesar's? What he was talking about, he's looking at a coin with Caesar's engraved picture relief on it, and he's like, I don't know, looks like it's Caesar's to me, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. But that kind of tricked them, and they're just going, dang it, man, we thought we had him there. What he did not say is that everything's Caesar's. What is not Caesar's, Eric?
Well, nothing rightfully belongs to Caesar, so he has the power to take stuff, but there's a difference between what he can do and what he has the moral authority to do, certainly.
So you can see, you know, from a young person's perspective, a young family, you're going to sit in there. I mean, I know that I'm not being told the truth. When you have Christ, it was very clear what he was doing. He's going, hey, nice try. You're not tricking me. But, you know, they would take that, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and never address the core principle. What is not Caesar's? And I want to dwell on that when we come back. Here on Declare Your Independence, you know, I have Eric, you know, with me. Eric Charlesberg is going to, he's doing a lot of evangelizing on the issue of Christianity and libertarianism. Turn neither to the right nor to the left. Find the truth. What is or is not Caesar's when we come back in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Killing people, dying, children hurt, and crying. Can you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us, send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Oh, it's right here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and I got Eric Charlesberg on. Go ahead and say your last name for me. I want to make sure I was saying that right.
Charlesberg.
And I want to make sure that people know that they have this resource, Christianity and Libertarianism. Now, what is the title? Is the title of the book Turn Neither to the Right Nor the Left, A Thinking Christian's
Yes.
Guide to Politics and Public Policy?
That's right.
Okay. Now, where would they be able to find the information of how to order? And go on Amazon, I would imagine.
Well, Amazon's got it. If they want to order a bunch of them, I can get them a bigger discount on them. But if they want to do a study with a group of people, for example, or want to hand them out to friends of theirs, then I can, you know, give them a break. If they deal with me directly, to shoot me an email.
In fact, last night, my wife and I tell you what happened. You'd be interested in this. Invisible Empire is a movie done by Jason Burmess. He works with Alex Jones. So he's one of the young men that did Loose Change on 9/11 and Fabled Enemies, and then his latest is Invisible Empire. And we got copies of it, and we have the duplicators here that they can make them. And this one woman, her name's Renee Houlihan, she goes to Calvary, which is a church in North Phoenix, a large church. And we have gone there for quite some time. I don't attend anymore because I just can't take it. You know, the pastor is just, you know, war, get them Muslims. And my wife, she's starting to, you know, Sunday morning I hear Pastor Chuck Baldwin on the computer. And what happened was Renee decided that she was going to take Invisible Empire, which kind of goes on, you know, the New World Order stuff. And she made hundreds of these copies. I think she probably almost 1,000. And she went to the church this last week and went to all the pastors and associate and assistant pastors and the staff and gave them all a copy of the movie saying, oh, wow, this is, you really need to know, you know, and if you really like this, we should distribute this to the entire congregation. And if you let me know, I'll do it at cost and blah, 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 knowing that they wouldn't. So she gave them heads up. They went and stood on the sidewalk, all the entrances, people going in, passed out all of the, they had, I don't know, half a dozen of the guys there Sunday and passed it all to the congregation. So this week, I know there's going to be a significant percentage that's going to be watching this and it's going to have an impact. Well, I'm wondering what impact, but in the discussion, they were talking at my home and they were saying that my wife was, had them over and friends and I was busy doing other stuff, but their discussion came down to, you know, should we have libertarian Bible studies? Should there be a libertarian church, a libertarian, you know, group, a libertarian pastor, a libertarian, all of a sudden they go, you know, that's just another collective as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I can see where the need would be there and help in the study, Christianity and libertarianism, turn neither to the left nor to to the right? I mean, is that a book that you think would facilitate what they want to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. It's been used a number of times for that purpose. You know, people, Christian, non-Christian, libertarian, non-libertarian, getting together and, you know, a half dozen people saying, hey, let's read the first three chapters this week and a couple chapters the next week. Let's just come together and talk about it. And it's a wonderful, you know, forum or foundation for that kind of discussion. So, you know, I think it's interesting from the pulpit, you'll hear knuckleheaded stuff. You'll also hear, you know, really apathy. People aren't that interested in politics sometimes in the pulpit. Sometimes they don't really care. Sometimes they feel like it's going to distract from the gospel. Sometimes they feel like it's going to, you know, get rid of some of their, drive away some people. So there's all kinds of different approaches and motives for the pulpit and its relationship to politics. But I couldn't be in a church that had, you know, had that sort of thing. It would drive me nuts too. But it'd be like hearing any kind of untruth from the pulpit. You know, life's too short to sit through that.
You know, what I remember, Charles Goyette and I, we had just went over to, took the shows over to Air America. The Air America affiliate here in Arizona was the most popular in the nation, and it was because we started off the morning show, Libertarian Morning Show, Charles Goyette Show, and I was producing, and we just kicked butt. But, you know, they got exposed to a lot of things that they didn't anticipate, and one of the things that we did, we said, you know, we're going to go. I had a lot of friends that would, in the church and so on, and a law partner of one of my business partners in the restaurant, he had a Bible study that where they were doing just war doctrine. Mm-hmm. And we had an opportunity to go. I said, you know, Charles and I want to go. We're going to, you know, let's get a handle on this. You know, what's going on? We're going to have Bible study that was going on all over the country. Mm-hmm. Some group, some organization was provided a Bible study for all the leadership in the churches to have men's Bible study to where they are going to do a just war doctrine on got to go to war with the Muslims. And this was most amazing. And you weren't allowed to ask questions. No. It's a 6-8 week program that we just go verbatim through the material. Then after the indoctrination at the end, we'll take questions. And I'm like, wow.
Just like Jesus would teach.
Yeah.
So no parables, I guess.
No, this was, we'll talk more about it when we come back, because the church has been used and abused throughout history to do exactly this, and it's getting more sophisticated. Where's our defense? How about a little bit of truth? Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Eric Schausberg. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
We're back in the saddle again here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, Eric Schausberg. We are going on about, you know, what it means to be a good little doobie. And, you know, it's not just Christianity or our culture here in America. This has been going on, you know, for a long time. You know, Jesus was a libertarian. You know, this is the scare you. You know, from that article, it says, what is this ethical core that Jesus and others throughout history have been teaching? It is referred to in many ways by different teachings as the golden rule or karma, you know, as you sow, so shall you reap, or the law of return, everything you do comes back to you threefold, or the reed, if it harms none, do what you will, or live and let live, or part of the Hippocratic oath is do no harm, and it's referred to in many ways in the Bible, some more subtle than others. The libertarian philosophy expresses it as do not initiate the use of force or fraud against anyone's person or property. In other words, self-defense is okay if necessary, but don't be the one to start a fight. Do not violate the rights of others. So I got to bring up this one. What's this sell your cloak for a sword thing? What's that all about?
I think that I don't remember the exact reference on that. I think he's just talking about there are times to go to battle. There are times when you've got to fight for, particularly again, to defend the rights of other people. And I think that's just a really big theme. Back to render unto Caesar, same idea. I mean, we can talk about, I don't want to pay my taxes, but it comes off a lot better when you're talking to people, when you start talking about payroll taxes and how that harms other people. And it's 15.3% tax on every dollar earned, no deductions, no exemptions. Half of it's supposedly paid by the employer, but if you think they pay their half, then you probably think the gas station pays the gas tax. So we bear that 15.3% burden on every dollar earned. And if you're working poor, earning 20 grand, the government's nicking you for $3,000 a pop. And people, when they hear that, they're like, what? They just find that really bothersome. And that's a great avenue to talk to people about, something about defending the rights of other people. And when render under Caesar is particularly offensive.
Well, at what point do you have a moral obligation to oppose? And that's one thing. I give you this example. When you're dealing with certainly Second Amendment people, I remember, for years, the argument has been, I can't be a conservative. I can't be libertarian. It's all that non-initiation of force thing. No force, no force, as they're sitting there arming up and getting all their camo ready. And I go, no, what does it say? It says the non-initiation of force. We're all about the, thou shalt not mess with me. So I'm like, one thing that I want to make sure people understand is that, look, this is not about just laying there and getting slapped around. Now, of course, Christ would teach, turn the other cheek. And that, oftentimes that's wise advice, because you don't fight the man on his field and his battle and his timing. But I'm wondering, what's the percentage? At what point does it become an obligation to resist the tyranny? When do you stop turning cheeks? Is that what's Christ's word on that? Do you know?
Yeah. Well, good people are going to disagree on where exactly that would be. I mean, even the initiation of force sounds like a very clear principle, but it's not exactly, right? If someone's holding, if someone's pointing a gun at you from 50 feet away, they haven't initiated force yet. They're just pointing a gun at you. So the threat's there, and I would say you're justified in firing before they fire at you and actually initiate force. But even there, it's spirit of the law, not letter of the law, and that's another teaching of Christ, that the letter, the law by definition is something that's inherently limited. It's trying to put into words how people should behave, and the law is just inherently limited in that way.
Well, it's a libertarian philosophy is that the initiation of force or fraud, and the threat of force or the threat force or the threat of force. I mean, they incorporate that scenario in their rhetoric, but it is a subjective thing. And that's one of the reasons why I focus so much on the evolution or back to what it used to be of Americans' culture. If we don't have a good, what was it said by the gentleman that came in the 1800s finding out, writing back to France, how literate America was? And he's like, and they're so good and they're so productive and they're so, and he's like, hey man, if, when Americans cease to be good, America will cease to be great. Well, we're ceasing to be good. So guess what? We're not great anymore. We need to get back to the great. And they think it comes out of a barrel of a chain gun on an A-10 or something. It does not. It comes out of us being good. We need to get back to a culture that requires, that demands, that immerses itself in non-initiation of force. First, do no harm.
I think another huge issue, public policy wise, maybe the number one issue is the government running the K-12 system, and there's so many angles to touch on, the expense of it, the philosophically bothersome, but a big part of it is they're cranking out a lot of people that just have suboptimal education, and so it's harder for them to understand these things. They're less likely to be productive, and therefore more likely to be tempted to use force or to rely on government to give them a check. I think to me the number one issue is education, and that, not just educating people to be libertarians, but if we have a society that's cranking out illiterates, it's going to make life really difficult, and it's going to make the growth of government more difficult to fight.
You know, there was a oh, I can't remember what it was called. It was something to do with Dunkirk, you know, Return to Dunkirk, Dunkirk, the children, whatever. And the reference was in Dunkirk, when the Nazis invaded France and you had all the French army and a bunch of Englishmen and so on, they're up against the sea and they see that, you know, they're going to be overwhelmed. They're done. If they don't get off that beach, you know, somebody save them, that with personnel transports or something, they're done. So what happened, all the fishermen and pleasure craft and so on in England just went, well, we'll go. And they just went over there, picked them up, and took them back. They're saved. Well, they used that reference, and it was an effort by pastors around the country in reference just last year, I think it was, that they were going, you know, the public school system is coming after your children. They're up against the beach. We got to go save them. It's got to be returned to Dunkirk. We got to go get these children out of harm's way. And the whole campaign was to encourage pastors through the churches to encourage their congregations to get their children out of the government schools.
Well, again, that's fine to talk about defending my own kids, and I think that's all fine and good. We homeschool for 3 years. We're doing private schools now. I think all that's fine, but again, I'd love to see Christians out there pounding the pavement, you know, setting up Christian schools. And, you know, the Catholics do a nice job on this, but, you know, why aren't Christians doing, going into that as a mission field and freeing up, you know, particularly inner city kids from 21st century slavery to government schools? That should be something that's at the top of the Christian agenda, not just to worry about, you know, which God we're praying to at graduation or, you know, this, that, or the other. I mean, a far larger issue is the justice issue of, you know, getting education to people that just are getting messed over by the government schools.
Well, what's the reaction, you know, to eliminate the schools or try to get in and fix it? I mean, what are you advocating?
Well, starting schools. You know, the Christians should put their money where their mouth is and invest in that sort of issue. That's a really important issue. Start inner city schools. Encourage the Catholic schools to make a difference in that. Create choice. And, eliminate or at least reduce the bondage that people in the inner city in particular are dealing with the K-12 system.
Well, how old are your children?
5, 7, 9, and 11.
Ooh, you're in the middle of it.
All boys. Two adopted, by the way, back to your adoption abortion discussion. I think that's another issue where Christians are, I think this has gotten better over time, but, you know, there's a lot of shouting about anti-abortion, but we need to be pro-life, and I think in all that means, and that means pursuing and promoting adoption, whether it's individuals or a church coming to help a couple that needs some financial help, whatever it is. Again, we should put our money where our mouth is and help out proactively with that issue.
In the same spirit as they're talking about Dunkirk, in the same spirit, the Ministry Exodus Mandate, is what they called the project, is calling Christians across the U.S. in 2009 to participate in a similar mass evacuation of the public schools. Why? To deliver our children from the clutches of the predominant secularism that rules the public school system with an iron fist. Even faithful Christian educators within this system, and there are many, freely admit that their hands are tied when it comes to teaching any subject from the perspective of a Christian worldview. The devil demands not only equal time, but pride of place. So I can understand from a Christian perspective that, you know, what's the first thing you want to do? Well, you want to save the children, save the little children, you know, just get them out of this indoctrination that's coming from what? From this all-powerful, all-knowing, omnipotent government thing. And they definitely are for the interest of the state. Because what happens is, you know, I've seen this so many times when I go to speak at schools at various levels. And it was junior high. It was 7th and 8th grade where they do the social studies and the government indoctrination. And you're starting to question authority and they want to get you beaten to submission. If you can get your kids, you know, out by junior high, just to avoid that, you know, you'd be better off than having them there. So I can see the result of having an entire generation of Christian children pulled out of the clutches of the man. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Homeschooling is getting easier. You know, I mean, homeschooling, it's come so far in just the last decade. And again, you've got people that are not willing to make sacrifice a lot of time. They want a bigger house. Well, how about a smaller house and educate your kids at home? And a lot of times Christians, unfortunately, aren't willing to make the sacrifices they really ought to get that done.
You know what's I have a lot of optimism, because to get people to be thinking we need a, you know, shinier, bigger, faster car, you know, we need to put our money into, you know, the flash in our driveway or on our boat or our trips or clothes we wear or whatever, as opposed to their children, to get Americans to be in that situation of consumerist mentality, it takes trillions of dollars in public education system, corporate media, propaganda, politics. I mean, it's an amazing effort that goes in to turning our attention from something as important as the education and upbringing of our children towards other stuff that just doesn't matter. And I'm going, but it takes trillions of dollars to do that. So I have hope. They're running out of money. So how, you know, are they going to be able to keep doing this? Oh, they're going to go down fighting. I know that. And so if you take children out of the public school system, what is it you think you're saving them from? What are you providing that's not provided in the public education system?
Well, it depends on context. Again, I mean, you know, for example, when we had our kids in public school for a few years, and it was fine. We had kind of a low quality teacher in second grade, so we pulled our eldest out and then did homeschooling. We've bounced around to some different things. We've got pretty good, I think, public schools. But by junior high, it'd be a disaster around here. I mean, it's lowest test scores in the state, are among the lowest, and some problems with violence and that kind of stuff. So that's just, you know, it's not at all an option. We were at a level where I didn't see much, if any, indoctrination that was bothersome. But I know that stuff goes on, you know, particularly if you're in a more urban school district. But if you're in, you know, kind of the heartland, your public schools are probably pretty good in that respect. They don't mess with you a whole lot in terms of indoctrination, but it just depends a lot. I mean, you could be worried about peer effects. You could be worried about, you know, Johnny learning, about things you don't want him to learn about, early on, or all the kids have cell phones and you don't want your kid to do that. And there's just so many possible angles where people would say, look, it's a low quality education, whatever. You know, there's lots of reasons within one's context where one might consider pulling kids out.
Well, I'll tell you what my big reason is, totally selfish reasons. You know, my whole purpose and focus was I have four children, two boys, two girls. They're 20 to 24 now, and they're great. When I grow up, I want to be just like my kids. But that didn't happen by accident. And my wife and I, you know, and certainly me, I mean, I was thinking 20 years in the future. I want to have, you know, an enjoyable retirement, an enjoyable being grandfather thing, got my second grandchild on the way. I'm good. But that came from a decision that, heck no. Once it became clear to me what they were doing to the children, I'm not going to raise children in a system that's going to have their ethics totally screwed up. I'm going to have to deal with all their crack addicted friends or whatever, their foul mouthed, you know, blah, 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 that they're en masse, they're trained to be, you know, totally different what a kind of child. We could not possibly do any worse by just taking them out and taking them home, which we did. And then we put them in private school from 7th to 12th. They went to private school. But I'm just – and we suffered. You know, you want to talk about, you know, doing without, man, we certainly did. But it was an investment. It was in our self-interest. I'll tell you, a lot of people, they get on me. I'm like, man, it wasn't anything altruistic about it. It wasn't anything, because I knew it was in my children and my own self-interest to create an environment that was going to produce an adult that was going to be somebody I wanted to hang out with. And the public school system was not going to do that. That was not their goal. They just needed to have good little serfs that will just say, yes, and boss, how high? And I'm going, no, heck no. So if you want to have the biggest, most positive impact on freedom and your future as a human being, get out of the government school system. You can't possibly do any work. Have them watch National Geographic movies, man. Learn to read. Give them a book. Subscribe them to that's what we did our kids. What interests you? How many magazine subscriptions can we get? We'll go over it. We'll learn from that. Get them out. Get free. Get away. And we'll talk more about it when we come back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Eric Schonsberg in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free.
God knows. God knows I want to break free. Let's start with the lies. How about we break free from the lies? I like that. That's my first choice. And I wanted to, you know, Eric Schonsberg, I put up on the today's archive to this, you know, live is linked to the wiki page. It has a lot to do with him. A lot, you know, my wife just put up on the top of Freedom's Phoenix, Jesus was libertarian. I guess she's listening because, man, she put that up. Because I remember that. Man, when was that written? That was written back in the day. I'm sure there's been several others. But it's this concept of Jesus being a rebel for freedom has been around for a long time. And it's also had a lot of detractors and people that know to be Christian is to be subservient to the law. Well, talk about that a little bit, Eric. What obligations do we have? We go with Romans 13. We got to do what they say. To what point?
Well, there's a couple other places where we're told, we're either told or it's modeled for us to disobey. I mean, so you look at Acts 4 where the authorities come to Peter and I think it's John and say, don't preach the gospel. And they're like, we can't do that. Our bones would cry out or some phrase like that, and we just have to do it. And they tell them, they let them go, and, of course, they go and preach. Or the book of Daniel where you have, Daniel's told not to pray in Daniel chapter 6 or Daniel chapter 3 where they're told to bow to the idol of Nebuchadnezzar, and they refuse and are thrown in the fiery furnace. So there are times when it's an easy call when the state is calling you to direct disobedience of what God has told you to do. It's a very easy call.
Well, I mean, give us an easy call. Is, you know, let's, you know, mandatory youth indoctrination to the, you know, evil worship of the state in public education, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, hey, man, that's pretty easy for me to make that decision. And a lot of states aren't as free as, like, here in Arizona. I remember having a family on the radio from Massachusetts that the state took guardianship of their children because they didn't teach them to respect state authority enough because they wanted them to take a state test and to kids refused to take the test.
Yeah. You know,
they did a court order to produce them. They got to go to some Motel 6 or whatever in a little conference room or something, and they put the test in front of them, and they just stared at it. Yeah, I ain't doing it. You know? So they go, well, what'd they do? Well, we're guardians now, and we sanction the parents because you didn't teach them to respect our authority. I mean, where's the line?
Well, I mean, if they were to get rid of, outlaw homeschooling, as I think it's Germany has done, some of the European countries really regulate homeschooling, I mean, that would be really, really tough. I mean, I'd have to think about leaving the country or something like that and just getting out. I think you're not going to stand up to the state effectively in that case, or it's going to be very difficult anyway, and I guess I'd be tempted just to emigrate. And just get out of there.
That seems like that's an easy truth thing for a Libertarian Party is, you know, where is it illegal for you to homeschool your children? Where is that? I want to know where that is. Oh, I feel a target coming on. I feel some, you know, red paint. You know, we gotta go target somebody. Hey, Eric, thanks for spending time with me, man. You want to give out a website, the easiest way to communicate with you?
I can go to Sean's blog. That's my blog, Schansblog, and they can find me through there.
Schansblog.com. Is that it?
Yep.
Thanks, Eric. This was a stimulating conversation.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
You know, this is something I want you all to think about. I wanted to spend time on this. We haven't done it in a while because it's so basic. How can you call yourself a person of Christ and not be Christ-like? And what was being Christ-like? You know, telling the truth, advocating for the individual, understanding that you are the highest steward of God's gift of life.